So this is how to fix Link 2013 when it breaks. As one of the attendees has already pointed out, we said when it breaks, not if it breaks. We're kind of assuming it's all the, you know, third-party legacy telephony stuff around Link 2013 that breaks, as opposed to our beautiful product. Just by show of hands, can I see who of you currently have Link 2013 deployed?
Oh, well done.
Wow, well done you. Awesome. Who has Link 2010 deployed? Sweet. Who has some other legacy telephony system, hardware device type thing that's not Link 2013 and 2010? Cool, okay. So quite a lot of Link people in the room if you're on the recording, which is good. So we've got a lot of Link 2010 and 2013 experience. Just to give you a quick idea of who I am, my name is Ewan McKellar, and for those of you in the room when I'm not wearing a Superman cape, I do various other bits and pieces. So sailing, cycling, drinking beer, and taking pictures of most of that stuff. and today, I'm a Brisbane-based engineer. I worked in the Link 2013 beta support team, and I'm a Link and Exchange field-based engineer in Brisbane. So I spend most of my time out helping people deploy stuff and then fix the stuff when it breaks. And it's my pleasure today to share the stage with Mr. Moore.
Hello, everybody. My name's Steve Moore. I'm a field engineer based in Canberra. For those of you who probably travel to Canberra, it's a hell of a lot cooler than it is up here. Last night I was having dinner, they had the heaters out. I was thinking, what is going on? But when I'm not playing with Link, you know, I'm spending time to learn how to do surfing, so would you believe it or not, based in Canberra, having a crack at doing that. But I'm that much of a Link nerd that I even spend time sitting on the couch with my wife Skyping each other, you know, so I'm pretty sad. So forgive me if I have a lot of bad jokes today. I don't have much life outside of Link.
He's not joking. He does read about Link of the Weekend, which makes him super smart, which is good. So, what we're going to do is give you some insight into troubleshooting problems in Link. There's a lot of stuff that you can do to very quickly diagnose issues with Link clients and Link servers, and there's a bunch of tools that you can use, some of which are Link specific, others which are, you know, kind of fairly familiar to most people in IT. And we're going to do some demos around those tools and give you some useful things to take away with you, hopefully a bit of a toolkit of ideas that you can take away for troubleshooting problems as we go through.
Just to add to, we've got a lot of slides that we're not going to talk too much to that we've just put in there just to show you stuff that you can have for takeaway. So download the slide deck, a lot of commands that are useful for things later, so we won't necessarily delve in. We've got a little blue pop-up saying this is for later, for after ticket. So.
Yeah, that's to remind us not to talk about it
for
10 minutes, because frankly, we don't have
time. If the heart raises and we see a command, we go, let me get in there.
Steve gets excited when he sees PowerShell. So what we're going to cover is some general troubleshooting tips. The basically your starting point, the things that you really need to think about when anything goes wrong with a Link client or a Link server. We'll then talk about some of the essentials of SIP. That's where we start talking about the underlying protocol that Link clients and servers use. And we'll look at how you can collect logs from clients and servers, how to get that information out, and some of the basics of analyzing that data. Then we'll move on to some not just useful networking tools, but really useful networking tools. And that's where Steve's going to go elbows deep in various different...
Maybe wrist deep.
Wrist deep, all right, maybe wrist deep in various different capture files, and he's going to show us some cool stuff around troubleshooting problems. We've got a section on reporting as well. So if you have the either the reporting role or the reporting database, then we'll have a look at some of the information you can get out of there to help you with troubleshooting. Right at the end, we've got a bringing it all together scenario, which Steve is going to take us through. It's based on a customer scenario that he was working with recently. And it's an interesting scenario. So what we're going to do is Steve's done a mock-up of that scenario, so you know we protect the names of the innocent and the guilty. And he's going to walk you through that using the tools that we've talked about. So basically, we're going to show you what you can use and then how you can bring it all together to solve a real-world issue. So on to some general troubleshooting tips.
Okay. Thank you, Ewan. Okay, so just to get it started, it's troubleshooting is not one of those things that's easy to teach. And, you know, I, for one, wouldn't consider myself the best in the world. But what we wanted to do is just cover a couple of the things that, I think are well worth you know, maybe thinking about for yourselves. The first one, for me, is really useful. So build a repository of network captures and snooper files. What I'm talking about there is really get to know your environment when it's working. You know, so do traces now as things are working beautifully. Put that aside and put that into a folder somewhere. So sort of say, okay, a remote user making a call to someone on the inside. Here's a snooper log. Here's a network trace. This is what it looks like when it's working well. And for me, when things are going bad, it's actually really handy to pull up one of those traces and have a look, do a side-by-side. What's different? Because quite often, if you have a look in the snooper logs, as Ewan's going to show us later, you can get lost. So it doesn't take long to sort of have a look in there and go, wow, there's a lot of stuff in there. It's very hard to actually see what's normal and what's not. So I you know, have a little file of all the different possible scenarios. And I think also, too, when you're doing that, you're actually getting to see how it actually works under the hood as well. So it's really sort of promoting that, getting to understand how things work. As PFE, so Ewan and I are basically in the support part of Microsoft. Having performance baselines is really useful. So what we really want you to do, what we're talking about there is get into PerfMine and use a concept that we call the black box concept. So basically build a set of PerfMine counters that we can add to your front-end servers and your edge servers, and then regularly run PerfMine on those machines, okay? So what we want to do, what I mean by that is, what I'm hoping is that you can maybe run over a week, what's the standard sort of load that happens on a machine, grab that BLG file and put it off somewhere, okay? So usually when things go bad, if you're keeping regular PerfMine baselines of your environment, you can start to see as things are escalating, and so you can respond a little earlier. And I find that the monitoring tools are good, but they don't look in at a really deep level, so they're sort of looking every, looking at minutes, so you can often miss some of the spikes that are sort of useful. So get yourself into the habit of capturing performance baselines. If you don't have a monitoring solution, and even if you do have a monitoring solution, one of the things I actually work on site at a customer about 50% of my time supporting a Link environment. And so one of the things I find useful is we regularly sort of once a day go and query all the red alerts on all our servers. So just get back all the what's red on those boxes and see if there's anything new. A lot of the stuff we've seen before, so we're not too worried about. We know what they are. We've sort of already worked through them. But if there's new stuff coming through, it's worthwhile. So it's not too hard to do that. I might actually post after the session a blog entry on just a script that I use to go and hit a bunch of servers and go and get all the Link red alerts. So if that's of use to you, keep an eye on the Canberra PFE blog. Okay, we've got a reference at the end of the deck. Okay, if you don't have a monitoring solution, try and get one. And in particular for your edge service, so I'm an edge person, I really like edge servers. When I do health checks of people's environments, one of the common places where we often forget about is monitoring our edge boxes. They're a little bit harder to monitor, but definitely worth doing. They're the ones sitting out in the cold face. And if you're not keeping an eye on what's going on with them, you can miss some important things happening. So definitely try and do that. Okay. So really get to know how Link works. And I've got DNS and certificates here. What do they say about Link? Now, one of the three things that tends to break Link is DNS certificates and the network. And usually when it's not those three, go and check those three again. It's usually the way it works. So, get to know how things work. Get to know your DNS requirements for your environment, okay? Sometimes people make changes and they shouldn't. They don't realise what they are, so they might delete things and so forth. Get to know how things work. Make sure you understand how you've got your certs set up. Understand all your URLs that we use in Link, so that's really important. It's one of the other areas that we find can be a problem. And the last point I think is probably the most important. Crack open Netminer as often as you can. Have a look at actually how Link works, so you get to understand the tos and fros in the different scenarios. So the other thing that I see when I do health checks of Link environments is that quite often that especially in smaller organisations in Australia, it's hard to actually get money and to put a lab together. So when I ask, do you do testing of changes that you make in production in a test lab, quite often the answer is no. But we really want that to be changed. And I'm always surprises me, maybe because I'm a hands-on person, I like to always make sure I do it in a lab before I do it in prod. Like, to give you a bit of an understanding, my actual laptop here got about 32 GB, which is probably unusual, but I can run about 17 VMs on that machine. And I've got load balancers on there, I've got soft PABXs, I've got virtual audio devices in my virtual machine so I can emulate calls in virtual machines. You can do a lot of stuff with virtualization. So, you should be able to have a pretty good lab with just one box. Now, if you get a switch, you can then hook in devices, okay? So you can have other machines connected to your lab. You can have a pretty good lab that you can really get to know your Link environment and how it works. So test, and do some more testing. Also mention the virtual audio devices and virtual video devices. There are a few things that you can do. Oh yeah. There are a few things that you can do with actual virtual audio devices in your virtual machine. So I find them tremendously useful, that virtual audio cable. Okay. The essentials are set.
Cool. So as Steve said, the important thing to doing a lot of troubleshooting is understanding the basics of the product. And the basics of the product for us from a Link perspective is SIP. Understanding SIP is going to help you fix a lot of issues. And just understanding some of the basics of SIP is really all you need to fix a large number of problems. You don't need to be an expert on this. Obviously, the more you know, the better. So SIP is essentially our application layer protocol that we're using to communicate between clients and servers. And SIP is something that came out in the late 90s, so 97, 98 timeframe. There's a couple of RFCs that were dropped around then. That define SIP as something that give us user location, availability, and capability. So essentially where somebody is, how able they are to communicate, and how willing they are to communicate in terms of are you not just online, but are you available. Right now, my status is set to presenting and do not disturb, so nobody can communicate with me on my corporate Link account, on my laptop, which I'll show in just a second. In fact, I killed it, so nobody can communicate with me. It also allows us to advertise the capabilities as well, so the capabilities of the devices that I have when I want to communicate. So if I'm going to be communicating with audio or video, we can advertise those capabilities through some SIP extensions, through things like SEP, which I can show you briefly. It also looks after all the setup, session, and management. So it's the one that's SIP is a protocol that's responsible for setting up sessions between users and setting up sessions between users and conference bridges, or specifically front-end servers in that scenario, and managing the session and tearing down the session later on. So essentially, it's like if, back in the day, if you were learning Exchange, you had to learn SMTP. To understand the way the mail system worked. It's exactly the same here. If you want to understand the way Link works, you need to understand the way SIP works in some level of detail. We can use various protocols. We've got UDP, TCP, and TLS. Essentially, not everything's necessarily guaranteed delivery within SIP, so there's application layer stuff to make sure that we get a guaranteed delivery mechanism, even when we're not using a guaranteed delivery method. For those of you that are familiar with Exchange, and I know it's oftentimes the email people who get thrown into unified communications world because it's, it's all communications, right? If you know SMTP or even if you know HTTP, it's a very similar protocol. So in terms of I use a method or a command verb to say something, and then I have a limited set of responses that can come back. And when you look at the HTTP and the SMTP standards where they have the responses, the 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 responses, those kind of responses are also in SIP. So you get, the informational responses down at 100, up to 200, which would be okay, up to retryable error, up to server error. So there's a number of different responses that will come back, and you'll start to get used to those as you delve into snooper logs. And it's a really great, as you delve into the SIP logs, and it's a really great place to start to understand in the way the product works. And building up a library of logs so you know what normal looks like is going to help you understand what's broken when something breaks, which you'll see later on with the bringing it all together session. SIP includes extensions for media, so that's SDP. Our session description protocol allows us to describe the capabilities, as I said earlier on. So the basics of a SIP conversation look like this. There's a specific reason I put this in, And that's just to say, when you're learning SIP, if you go to any of the resources on the internet, and there's a ton of people that will tell you the way SIP works on the internet, incidentally, SIP is really it's a cookbook. It's a series of recommendations on what vendors can support and what vendors can provide. So when you look around the internet at lots of different blogs and websites, people will talk about SIP for different flavors of vendors. So there will be some differences between the way Microsoft do things and other vendors do things, but hopefully there's enough similarity that we can all interoperate quite nicely. But you're going to start seeing these ladder diagrams. So this is the command and response, or the method and response that we get inside SIP. So we can see over on the right-hand side, we've got the A party, which is sending out an invite to our B party over here. And that SIP invite that's going across then has several responses. And by working with SIP, you're going to start to understand what a normal pattern looks like when an invite, specifically when I'm trying to start an instant messaging conversation between two users in this scenario, looks like. So there's a few header files, a few header fields that you need to get to know. I'm not going to talk about these very much right now. I'm going to show you in a demo in a second. But essentially, when you come back to the slide deck later on, you need to be looking at these headers as an absolute minimum. There's additional stuff in there. There's extra stuff in there that's going to be really, really useful. But if all you know is this, then you're halfway to troubleshooting at least some problems. So we have the request URI, which is the start line at the very top. And that includes the SIP method. And the SIP method will be something like register. So when I log on, when I want to authenticate with my front-end server, when I want to register as online and available, I'll send out a register method. If I want to start a conversation, I'll send out an invite method. So there's various methods. In the SIP method, once we've sent out a SIP method, we'll then get a response, which will be in the same line, and that will be a numeric value followed by some text. The numeric value, like SMTP or HTTP, is the important thing. The text after it is just so that you and I can read that without having to look up what that value is. We then have the from and the to address, and that's the sender SIP address, or address of record, and the receiver SIP address. Sometimes that can be the same. So specifically for a register, when I'm authenticating and then going online with my registrar, the from and the to address will be my SIP address. We have call ID. Call ID is used to identify the call. So it's used to identify all of the SIP messages inside a single transaction. So if I've got a SIP client and I have 5 or 6 instant messaging conversations going with individuals, my SIP client can identify which SIP packet is associated with which conversation using this call ID. The call ID is a random looking string. It's quite a long string. We actually have another couple of things that we use, which are tags in the from and the to line, which I'll show you shortly, that we use to identify the conversation. And that's really, really useful to know when you're looking at logs inside of Snooper. The last thing we have that's really important to know, and again, there's other stuff in there that is important to know, but these are the most important one, is the command sequence. And the command sequence is really an incremental counter for the method that we're using, so that we know which method we are responding to. So in terms of collecting logs from clients and servers, there's different places to get the logs. And I'm guessing you have Link desktop clients, just by show of hands, Link desktop. Okay, Windows App Store client, also known as Modern UI, previously known as a word beginning with M we can't say anymore. iPhones, iPads, Droids. Yeah, okay, so pretty much everybody's got everything. So collecting this data, you really need to know where to go to pick it up. So from the desktop client perspective, it's pretty straightforward. It's inside /user/username/appdata/local/microsoft/office/15/link/tracing, and then you've got the link UCCAPI.UCCAPI.log. Very straightforward. There is a different location for the App Store client. So this full path, including what looks like some kind of random string value, that's actually the path that it will be on every single machine. The only difference is going to be the username aspect for that path. If you've got the LWA plugin, so if you're running this through a browser, then you'll find it inside, again, AppData local Microsoft LWA plugin / tracing. So this will give you a SIP log for all those clients. From a mobile perspective, if you've got a user with a desktop, an app store, or LWA, you need to somehow get access to the data that's sitting on that client, either RDP in or connect to the C drive of that machine and pull it off. If a user's got a mobile client, that becomes much more challenging. So typically inside mobile clients, you'll see inside settings, there's an option to switch on diagnostic logging. And inside settings or about, depending on the client you've got, and this covers iPhone, Android, and Windows Phone, there's an option for the client to, or the user themselves, to send that diagnostic information through. And that will send through an email which has a JPEG, and it has some diagnostic information about the device that they're sending it from. So I can show you that momentarily. So from a server side, excuse me, from the server side, in case anyone's wondering what that is, those are goodies for good questions. We've got a bunch of Plantronics
good
devices.
Good answers.
We
might ask some questions.
We could do. So from a server perspective, we can collect link log information. And this is really great. If you've got a client who's got an issue and another client that's got an issue, you may want to collect data from both of the clients, but also from the server or servers in between. Who of you have used OCS Logger in the past? Yeah, who have you found that really super easy to use and simple to understand? All right, lots of hands for the first question, none for the second question. So the OCS Logger wasn't easy. You had to choose the scenarios you want, the components you wanted, and then the flags, and there was other stuff, trace levels. It was somewhat difficult. There was one article on TechNet that described what all of those things were, and sometimes even I couldn't find it. I'm pretty sure I bookmarked it, but I kept losing it. So we've got a service now on Link that it's called the Centralized Logging Service, and this is responsible for collecting logs. You can use PowerShell. We all love PowerShell, right?
Absolutely.
You can use PowerShell to collect logs for you, so you can get the kind of logs that you'd want without going through OCS Logger. And that brings me on to a couple demos. The first one is a CLS demo. And I'm flying in Steve's Link environment today, so I may have to ask you questions as we go. Don't go anywhere. So the first thing I want to talk about is CLS. Great start to the demo. Typo already. Don't you just love it? So if I show CLS logging, this is the CLS logging show command here shows me what's logging is enabled right now on the servers. And what it should do is, you've got a big Link environment, haven't you? Yeah, I should have demoed this in my little two machine lab. So this is going to go through and it's going to show us the logging that's enabled across the entire environment. So I could focus it on a specific pool, I could focus it on a specific server, or I could focus it on absolutely every server in the organization. Which is kind of cool, because if you think about OCS Logger, it was something that you had to RDP into every server and fire up on every single server. So this shows me across my Link environment. You can see here we've got my Link Edge pool, my Link pool, and you've got persistent chat in there as well. Steve is not just the Edge guy, he's also the persistent chat guy. So if you've got any persistent chat questions, hang around and ask those later. So if I have a look at this pool, we can see at the moment that we have at the pool level, we've got a setting, and then at the server level, we have a setting. At the pool level, it says always on equals no, kind of a strange one. Instead of, as with OCS Logger, we have these individual checkboxes you tick, and you're not quite sure what they do. We have scenarios now. And the scenarios that we can put on are kind of human-readable text. If I have a look at CSCLS scenario, this shows me all the scenarios that I can have. If I pipe that to a slightly better style like this, this shows me the scenarios that I can have, which are pretty much human-readable text. Certainly, if you know the product, you'll be able to understand what everything is here. So if I've got a user who's got an IMMP issue, then I can just enable the IMMP scenario. If I've got a user who's got an incoming and outgoing call issue, I can enable the incoming and outgoing call scenario. And that will collect the data that that we know you will want to see for that specific scenario. There is a scenario, if I scroll back up to the top, which is called always on. Always on, as you can see, is not always on. although it's called always on. The reason it's called always on is because if you turn on always on, then it's always on. Whereas the other scenario is if you turn them on, they just stay on for about 4 hours or however many hours you've specified. So always on is not always on unless you turn it on, in which case it is always on. Always on just collects minimal information. It's like the lightweight kind of de facto. If you just want to make sure that you've got something running, then stick on always on. Always on also instantly persists through a reboot as well. But if you want to log for a specific scenario, you have to enable that scenario. You can only have one scenario on at a time in addition to always on. So if you want, you can have always on and then enable one extra scenario. And you can enable one extra scenario for either the entire pool, or you could potentially have different scenarios for different servers within a pool if you have different users connecting into those different servers.
I just wanted to add too that be careful too that you can only do this sort of on one pool at a time. So if you've got multiple engineers trying to do logging, you actually want to do this at one engineer at a time too. So make sure you're coordinating when you're going to turn logging on for the extra scenarios. Make sure you're working across the team that looks after that pool and only turn it on for one scenario at a time. Okay, so otherwise the other engineer will stop your logging.
Thanks for that. So, start CS CLS logging. This is how I start logging. For those of you who may have read about CLS controller or seen any presentations about CLS controller, forget that. That's pre-RTM stuff. It's still there under the covers, but we now use PowerShell. It's a much simplified syntax. So if I start CS CLS logging, specify my pools, which is, LUNK? Is it link pool?
Link pool, duncantoast.org, yeah.
Duncantoast.com.
Org.
Whoops. Yeah. It's a not-for-profit
link environment. Org. Oh, yeah.
There you go. I should clearly have stayed in bed. And then I can specify the scenario that I'm interested in, so always on. And if I just fire that, that's going to now enable logging across all the link servers in my pool without me having to RDP into any of them, and that's now logging across those three servers. And for my users, if I'm interested in IM and presence or any of the other scenarios, I can turn that on. So you can now see we've got always on and IM and presence on. So those servers are now collecting SIP logs for me to analyze at some point later. We can stop CS CLS logging. And again, that would be exactly the same syntax. You just specify the pool and the scenario that you want to stop. Now, the data that's being written to these servers right now is written into memory and gracefully pushed down to disk at some point. Once it's pushed down to disk, you can then start doing a search. And this search allows you to search across the logs for an entire pool. And it will pull back those logs to whatever output file path you want, which can just be something on your local file system. So that's aggregating the data across all of the servers. Now, obviously, that can be a large volume of data for busy enterprise pools. So we can put in various parameters. We can put in parameters like URI. So if you're not a specific user, you can put in URI. You can put in things like start time and end time. So you can really filter down the amount of information that you get back from the servers. Thanks for that. Just completing my syntax here for me. That's okay, because now I've enabled logging on those servers. If I wanted to, I'd search them, purely because Steve's demo at the end is super awesome, and I've got to leave lots of time for that. I'm going to switch over to this machine, which has locked itself, which is so cool. And I'm just going to quickly show you some snooper stuff. Enough that when Steve talks about it later, it'll all make a ton of sense. And, oh, there you go. It did say unmissable. I'm very proud of that. Thank you. So I've got on my machine, I have, and this is just my production machine, my corp laptop from Microsoft. I've got a couple things here. Oops, let me get rid of that. This is the tracing folder location for my client. So we can see that's just the location that I told you for my desktop client, and that's the link log. If I drop that onto Snooper, That's going to open up the Snooper tool. Snooper tool, incidentally, you can download with the debugging tools for Link, so the 2013 debugging tools. It deploys Snooper and OCS Logger if you're still really hankering after that older experience, the kind of more retro angle. It drops it into program files, Link Server 2013 debugging tools. And it's going to give you the ability to
interrupt you there just very quickly?
Sure.
Just if you do have any problems with Snooper crashing, too, we actually released the 13 debugging tools a while ago and we refreshed them in July. I think it was July, was it July? Anyway, so make sure you get the latest debugging tools because there was some problems in the early Snooper. Okay, so make sure you work with the latest one.
Always apply the latest patches.
Always
to your production software. This is what the Snooper logs look like, and this is the SIT logs from my desktop client. You'll get exactly the same kind of thing from the App Store client. You'll get those kind of logs in there as well. And just going through this, I just want to show you some of the fields that I talked about. We can see that we've got this start line where we are sending the register. So that's a method I'm using, and I'm sending the register to SIP to Microsoft.com. You can see it's SIP version 2. It's always SIP version 2. We then get the from and the to, and we can see the from there is unm@microsoft.com. So this is my corp account from this morning, and you can you see the time? I was up at like 5 o'clock this morning doing this, just want you to know. Oh, 7:29, so this is when I got in today. And we also have a tag and an EPID. The tag I'll talk about in a second. The EPID is the endpoint ID. If you have multiple points of presence, then each one will have its own unique endpoint ID. So when you're looking through the logs, you can tie up which log from the server side you're seeing from the client side. We then have the to line, which does not have a tag. I'll explain that in a second. But this is because it's a register is just to myself. And then I've got call ID, which is the thing that identifies what I'm doing or the call that I'm in. And then we've got the register. So essentially, this is me trying to register or authenticate with my corp account. I get three unauthorized before I finally get a SIP OK. That's the normal process for TLS DSK, so certificate-based authentication. If you see two, that's NTLM. If you see one unauthorized, then an authentication, that's Kerberos. So red error stuff isn't necessarily bad. It's just part of the process, which you'll understand as you go through this. I'll just briefly show you an invite, which is another method. There we go. Snooper stopped working. Awesome. Maybe I should download the latest version of Snooper. Let me drop that in here again. Whilst I'm waiting for that to open, I'll just show you. This is what a phone log looks like. So this is the device diagnostic information that I sent to myself this morning. You'll see if I open up this log that it is actually just a JPEG of the link icon. Not massively useful until you save it off. And once you've saved it off, where did I save it off to? I think I saved it off to here. There we go. So that's my JPEG. If I change this off to a text file extension and open it up, we'll get a lot of good information in there. And you'll start to see, as I scroll down, you'll start to see that you get all of the, past all this text, you start to see that you'll get some of the URLs that the client's connecting out to. Maybe this is actually just a JPEG. that's awesome. So let me save as. So I'll save that as a dot log. Okay. So that was what the inside of a JPEG looked like. And this is the inside of a client log. And again, yeah, there's a bunch of stuff at the start. But you'll start to see that you get the auto discover service and the URLs that you would have configured for your clients to connect in. And you can follow that process through. And you can actually see my link client downloading all the groups that I have in link and then all the contacts that I have in link and then creating the aggregate information across those contacts. And you can see the same kind of thing in Snooper as we go through a trace where I'm sending out subscribes for information and I'll start to get back all of my configuration settings and all my contact lists and so on. So you get a good understanding of how the product works.
Sorry, can you dump that JPEG log file into Snooper? Will Snooper take that?
Yeah.
You can rename it as UCC API log and just double click it then. It'll open up.
So if I go right down to the bottom, I'm trying to find an invite without doing a search because Snooper is crashing for me. There we go.
He's actually having crashing problems because his log file's too big. So one of the things I'll have got later in the deck is a way of just resetting your profile. It's worthwhile just regularly clobbering your log file. I was checking mine yesterday, I had about a 30 meg log file and it was getting too big. Snooper's not coping with searching through it.
Yeah. All right. So I was just trying to show you that what an invite looked like. But I guess I should let you get onto your section, and you can look at the invite when you go through the problem that you had in your scenario.
Sounds good. I can do that. Okay. So let's go back out to our deck. Where's our little picker? Should be number one. Ooh, that's a bit early. I'll get rid of that. Okay, cool. All right, what have we got? Snooper demo. Okay. So this one here is just really for after. I was talking about performance monitor capturing. If you are interested in creating PerfMon BLG files on a regular basis on your servers, send me an email after the event. I'll give you the text file that we're using as an import here. But this is just showing, because the organisation I'm working for, we've got a lot of servers, so we wanted to set up the PerfMon counters on a bunch of boxes. This is just a quick and easy way of actually setting up PerfMon for all of our servers across a bunch of servers. So let me know if you want to use this, but it's more for after the event. Okay, so really useful networking tools. Let's see how we go. So as I mentioned before, I think one of the most common problems that we see with Link is usually around certificates, DNS and networking, okay? So if you get to know some of the tools that will help you solve these problems, most of the time you only get to the bottom of the cause, okay? So I've got a couple of things here and I'm going to show you some of these. Digicert.com/help, it's a really good tool for actually just checking in federation scenarios. So if you want to check someone else's certificate and have a look at when the actual edge pool name they provided you is actually right, you can actually use this tool to actually have a look at the SANs on a particular certificate. And you can do that for particular ports. So you can actually say, you know, hit 5061 or hit 443 or whatever. If you're maybe, don't have access to actually look at the certificates yourselves, you can use this tool to actually interrogate. The other thing I often do is fire up Firefox. It's actually pretty good at, you can use it to hit a particular port. Like say, if I want to look at my Edge servers and have a look at the cert, maybe I'm not an administrator on the edge, I can actually use Firefox and hit the sip.contoso.com on 443, and before it passes through, it'll actually say, oh, I don't trust this, and you can go in and actually have a look at the cert and make sure everything is set up the way you expect it. So if you're troubleshooting and you don't actually have admin access, it's a good tool to actually use. NS lookup, I know it's a basic one, but definitely has helped me in a lot of situations. Netmon, you really got to get to know Netmon and Wireshark, so I'm going to show you some demos on that. Display DNS, if a lot of people don't know about that command in ipconfig, I use that heaps. It's amazing how often you find something with just using display DNS. So it tells you what a particular Windows client has been looking up in DNS, and more importantly, what has it not found. So when it's looked something up and not got an answer back, you get a big name not found. So I usually throw that into a text file, go and have a look at the name not found and see what is it actually looking for that maybe isn't set up properly, okay? Righto, the other tools that are really handy, port query. So if you want to actually check out, make sure that all your ports are actually open the way they should be. So if you've got a comms issue, I've got some samples to actually show you. You can just run and put in a batch file, just go and test from all the different spots. Do I have connectivity as I should do, okay? I always put Telnet client on all my servers, so I don't know why we turn that off, but I find it a very useful tool. So pretty much all my Link servers, I'll install the Telnet client. Okay. Netmon. So for Link, one of the things that people often don't realise is that we've got parsers that are worth installing that actually will help provide additional information when you're doing a network trace of Link. Okay. So don't just install the NM34X64XE. Okay, make sure you install the Windows parsers and the Link parsers, and you do it in that order, okay? So If you try to do that one first, it'll actually complain and say the turn and stun is in the second parses, okay? So get all three. So get into the habit of, on all your servers, put all three of those on, and you'll find that you'll get a lot more information when you do a trace of, of link calls. Just check the version too, because I think we released a... We had two NM34 X's, so just make sure that that first one is this version number, okay? I've got NM Decrypt up there as well. That's not a bad tool for if you're looking at your own environment. It can actually decrypt encrypted traffic, but it requires having access to the cert that did the encryption. So you'll need to get a cert off your front end to actually do the decryption. So it's really only useful in your environment. Colour rules, I'm going to show you those in a sec. They're really useful. So you can build a set of colour rules in Netmon for all the different types of traffic. So when you're actually looking at a trace, you can see web conferencing in blue, SIP in orange, media in blue, in green, whatever you want to do. So when you're going to have a look at a trace, you can pretty much very quickly see what's going on. Okay? Righto. Let's get in and have a quick look. Ooh, okay. Okay, so let's start with DigiCert. So it's a useful tool I've found in federation scenarios. So if you have if you're trying to federate with somebody and you don't have any visibility of how they've got certs set up, I've seen a few times where when we do the federation handshake, we do the dance and we don't trust the other party's cert, or they've got the wrong sand on their cert or whatever, this is a good tool to check that out. So I actually just hit sipmicrosoft.com on 443, and it's provided me with details about what's on that cert. So the stuff that's useful, have we got it on here? On my sands. Oh yeah, these are the things that I really am after, that subject or turnit names. I'm really just wanting to make sure that the names that I'm supposedly connecting on are actually on that cert. If they're not there, I'm going to have troubles connecting, okay? So I find that quite a useful tool. You can hit that on 5061, so you can change the ports that you want to connect on. If you wanted to change this up here, just do that. Throw 5061 on here like that, and off we go. Excuse me. This is another useful tool I find useful for if you don't have access to an external machine connected to the internet when you're working at OnCorp. It's good for actually doing service record queries from a browser. I would strongly recommend that you get an internet connected machine as well at Corp, so get yourself an ADSL link if you can, but if you can't, this is a good tool for that. Okay. Let's get into Netmon. So I've actually got two VMs here, and one's internal, my virus protection's out of date, and one's on the external side, okay? I just wanted to quickly show you the use of Netmon for different things and how I use it to just familiarise myself with how Link does things. So let's start off Netmon. Now what I've done here is actually created some colour rules. They're really simple, but useful when you're building up as you're going along. I've just got the IP addresses for all my Edge services. So the Edge has three services on its external interface. And in my lab, my Edge servers have dedicated IPs for those services. So all I've done is colour-coded traffic to those particular services so I can see as things happen, when I do something in the Link client, what's actually being used when I actually do it. So a good example is the web conferencing service. A lot of people think that app sharing goes through that service. It's not. It actually goes through the audio-video service as an example. So it's really good when you're familiarising yourself with the Link environment, have a look at that and you can sort of see how things work. So let's just quickly show you that. By the way, when you build this up, you can save this off. So you can actually save those as config files that you can share across your team, okay? Righto, here we go. Let's kick one off. Okay, so I've got my Link client here. I've got Mark, who is super and is strong. Aaron over here on the left. Let's do a quick call. Actually, what we'll do is we'll start send some IMs. Mark is in the audience, so... thank you, Marky. Okay, here we go. Have you heard Dave is at the TechEd conference? Okay, so what I wanted to see is, now I've got auto scroll on here, so I've got Aaron Cool over on the side. Now what you would have seen there was there's a little bit of purple is the web services, but the orange is the SIP. So this is IAM conversations. So IAM conversations take place over SIP. So that's my Access Edge service on my Edge server. So if I throw a few more things in, let's just paste them. I'm not going to get too exciting. I'll just do a few more things so you can see that coming through. So you can see that all of that's being SIPs. Now, if I escalate this to a conference, okay, let's do a whiteboard. So what we'll see is that I think I've got web conferencing on orange, on green. Okay. Oh, I didn't want to show you so much the conferencing functionality, but more about what happens under the hood. So you can see here, I'm seeing that, okay, right, it's hitting web conferencing. When I actually do that, I'm hitting the web conferencing service. So if I do a little pretty picture of Ewan, we should see a bit.
It's beautiful.
It is good, isn't it? We should see a fair bit of green stuff going on. Okay, so now I want to escalate that to an audio call. And what I'm expecting to see, I've got media in blue color-coded, okay, so my audio video service. So let's escalate that to a call. And what we should get over here is being asked for a call. Okay, join the conference call. Okay, so you can see there pretty clearly that what's being used. So this was really not much, so much to sort of tell you about how Link works, but for you, when you're actually analysing your environment, go and do this sort of stuff. Play around with how it works so you can get familiar with what's actually being used in each scenario, okay? Because we do things differently based on what we're doing, conferencing, whether it's peer-to-peer, all that sort of stuff. Get familiar. And now those colour files, you can really build really rich colour files. So we've got some out of the box. So when you actually install those parsers that I was telling you about, troubleshooting is a useful one. You can see you get a lot of stuff in here when we do that. I actually just build my own most of the time. So I use one sort of like this. Let's see if this opens. And so then I get, colour coding for G722 or G711. So you can do all that sort of stuff, SIP traffic, turn, bind, all those sort of different things that happen inside of Link situations. So you can see straight away, once you familiarise yourself with the colours, what's happening. Because it's quite often hard to read that as it's flying past. It's a lot easier to see it when you're doing it with colour coding. Okay, let's stop that. Okay. Kill that off. I know I've talked about it. A real no-brainer. Display DNS. I'm probably not going to have a lot in here, but because I've cached a fair bit of stuff. But it's amazing how often you get the name not found when you go and have a look. When you're troubleshooting a problem, you'll often see, we've got a query for something and a name not found. It's a lot easier than doing a filter on DNS queries inside of Netmon. One other thing I didn't say, actually, was up here too, we do a pretty good job of filtering by process. So I usually jump straight to the Link exe when I'm having a look at, when I'm doing tracing what's going on, because you get a lot of noise, obviously. Be careful too, though, when you do the filter by the Link process, sometimes you miss some stuff. So I usually start here for DNS. DNS seems to be happening at a lower level, so if I throw in DNS as a filter, I'll often miss DNS if I just filter by the client. Pretty much everything else seems to come through beautifully under the Link exe, and then I get rid of all the noise that's going on in that particular box. Okay, cool. Let me just check what else I wanted to show you. I've got a memory like a sieve, so. Righto, so let me just show you. One of the other things that I find useful too is, I mentioned certs, I mentioned networking and DNS. Port query is a great tool for actually checking that you've got all your ports open. So let's go and do a quick check. This is an external client. Pretty sure it is, yep. Okay, so we'll just go and do a port query. I can't copy and paste yet. I'm not on 8.1. I need to swap over. Port query, -n, sip.containerserver.com. This is my Access Edge service. I'm going to check 443 and 5061 for federation on an Access Edge service. I'm going to use TCP And I'm going to drop, well, actually, I won't bother dumping to a log. I can dump to a log. Whoop. Okay, better make sure I got the tool. Yeah. Have you seen this? That's a cool tool. Port query, let's do it again. Okay, so did I minus O, minus L, zipped up. What have I done wrong? Minus N, zipped up until so I found 443, minus P, TCP. Ah, good one, thank you very much. Give that man a award, I think, Ewan.
Which man was that?
Okay, so you can see there, I made a successful connection. It's listening on those ports. So put this all in a batch file so you don't do fat fingers like I just did. And so you can. I've got actually in the deck, you know, client to edge, what are all the ports that should be open, edge to front end to edge, what are all the ports that should be open, and just put this in a batch file, regularly check, you know, that everything's working, that the comms... Yeah, sure, sure. Yep. Control 2. Let's have a look. There you go. There's that top. It's the control 2. This will test me. Control 2. And then we'll do a control 1. If that works, I'll be impressed. Now, oh, well, port query, minus N, sip.contoso.com is the line we want this guy here. I've got this in the deck, so don't worry too much about writing it down. You can go and use that. The other thing that port query is not great at is UDP traffic, okay? So the audio video service primarily does media over UDP, okay? So port PS Ping is a tool from SysInternals. It can do a UDP check for you, okay? So I've got that in the deck on the commands for doing that, so you can actually confirm that 3478 is open on the access edge service, audio video service, I should say, okay? That's probably... If you haven't, anybody seen the Link Firewall Rules Viewer? Some of you should have, because I'm sure I've taught a couple of you in a Link course. It's a pretty cool tool. It's 2010, so it's not necessarily has everything that we have for 13. A lot of it still stays the same, so it is worth still having a look at. It's pretty cool just to see what's the flow into the from and to types of traffic based on our TechNet documentation. Okay. So have a look at that. It's called the Link Firewall Rules Viewer. So it's just a GUI way of seeing how, because ports is one of those things that's very tricky to get through. The other thing that I think is useful is the Link 2013 planning tool. Okay, I know you're probably all techs, don't want to stay away from planning tools, but the planning tool is actually not bad at creating a spreadsheet with all the ports. So if you can spend the time to actually document your environment, it'll then dump out all the ports, the from and to that are required. Okay, so it's not that's useful. Righto. Let's get back to our deck. Okay, so PS Ping, I've got this in the deck. Shows an example. It's sort of a little bit confusing about whether the port's open or not. It just says you get a refused connection. It's because I didn't actually authenticate to the service. It's saying, no, you can't come in. This is where actually it's not listening. Okay, so two examples. So it's useful just to confirm UDP's up. Righto, here's some examples. We'll save that for later. Okay, when you're troubleshooting with clients, so you're looking at helping somebody who's having a problem, you know, you're not going to be able to say to them, can you just fire up a network trace and send that to me? You know, that's never going to happen, right? NetSH is actually a tool that you can use to remotely do a network trace without installing anything on the machine on the other side. Okay, so it's a pretty cool tool. I've got a blog for how to use that up there from one of our colleagues, Chad. So that's worth doing. So if you need to get a network trace, you'll be able to get them to turn on the logging in their link client. That should be able to get you a UCC API log. This is a nice way of getting a network trace as well. Okay. Netstat. I use Netstat a lot just to make sure that everything's up and running. So I can search for 443, 3478, make sure everything's happening. You know, it's more just, I usually use that when I'm sort of doing health checks on a daily basis. Okay, cool. Let's screen through this now. What do we got? Networking tools demo. Oh, I've already done that. Okay. This is more for you guys. Just a reset profile script. It's good for when you're doing testing, just to clobber your link profile, get rid of everything that, and so you can start afresh, or the client will actually go and do all the things that it does when it starts. Okay. So a useful little tool for when you're playing around, getting to know your environment. Okay, reporting. So I'm not going to dwell a heap of time on this because I really want to get to our section on the end. But just to give you a little bit of feel of how it works, when two people actually make a call, so we've got this person over here, Aaron and Mark, when they actually make a call, at the end of the call, I've jumped ahead, the actual, both endpoints, tell their front end, so down here, how the call went. Okay, so we provide information about, you know, was there latency, was there packet loss, all that sorts of information. And then that data has ended up written to our reporting database, okay? So after that's done, you as engineers can actually go in and have a look at that data using SQL reporting, okay? You don't just have to use SQL reporting too. So there's actually some pretty rich data in there in the actual raw SQL tables. So if you're brave enough to fire up SQL Management Studio, there's actually some pretty interesting stuff in there. I'm happy to provide one of the queries as an example that I regularly get asked is what client versions are people using out there? It's amazing how often we get 10 different client versions being used in people's environments. With a nice, easy SQL query, I can actually go and say what person, what IP, what client version are they using? Okay, so we keep that sort of information out in there. Probably the thing that I find reporting is going to help you the most in is in troubleshooting call experience. It's usually when the boss calls up and says, you know, this link, it's terrible. I had a rubbish experience. You can actually get in and see, well, you were sitting in the airport and you were getting a 1,000 millisecond round-trip latency. Maybe there's not much I can do to help you. So let's go back to our landing page. I'm going to spend about 1 minute on this because I want to get to the scenario at the end. So probably the reports that I find the most useful for you is this media quality summary report and the media comparison report. The device report sometimes useful too because it tells you if you've got people using devices that are sort of related to really bad calls. So that report too I also would check out. Quite often people are using their inbuilt audio devices and so I'm not using their headsets properly. So that's a good way of sort of seeing when people are doing that. So we'll just do that quickly. The other thing that's nice actually too just for your bosses is the dashboard. You can actually do by 30 day or just for the last week. How is the system being used overall? And so I find this is kind of useful just to see when it finishes. If it finishes for me. Okay, well, while we're talking, so definitely check those media quality reports. They're really good at seeing what were the sort of calls that were having problems and what were the parties involved in those calls. You even get details around the IP addresses, the version of the link client that they were using, were they internal, external, all that sorts of stuff. So pretty detailed information. This is just a lab environment, so not particularly exciting, but the stats down the side there is pretty useful. You can see how much total audio minutes people are using, how many conferences are people actually creating during a week or a month period. It's pretty good for the bosses. Okay. Now for you guys, more interestingly, let's get into this media quality report just really quickly. Okay, so you can see here I've got some red. So red's bad, obviously. We've got some problems. Round trip millisecond latency of 1,000 milliseconds. So that's probably not going to happen a lot. I was doing some filtering of traffic, making it look bad. You can see if I actually drill down, I can see who was doing that. I got one here. Let's go to this one. 2,000 milliseconds round trip. Wow. 16 calls. I bet it was that Aaron fella. Let's have a look. Could be Marky as well. Okay. So this is going to show me who was actually having the problem. Oh, it was Yoda. Aaron and Yoda. So you can actually see who were the people that were experiencing the bad calls. So if the boss has told you, oh, having this terrible situation, you can then get in and actually see, let's find some more details about what was happening when you made that call, okay? And also I'll get IP addresses, I'll get the agent, the client version that they were on, all that sort of stuff. So there's some really good information in here to help you with work out what was going on. And we've got a link in here to how you actually use this reporting tool for monitoring enterprise voice calls in here. So there's a pretty good document on this. So well worth a read. Have a listen to that. Have a look at that, and you'll get a lot more detail. Yeah.
It's only used for voice calls. Does it capture IMSS?
Yes, it does. Yep. So it's pretty much all activity within the link environment. Okay. So, you know, when you and I do a conference, that's tracked. If we do an IM, that's tracked. We don't track what was communicated, just that it happened. Okay, cool. The other thing, very fast, I'm going to wrap this up now, is use this one here too, the user activity report. You can put in phone numbers in here, or people's CPRIs, so you can get to the detail. If you said, you know, so Manish here, he made a call to somebody on a particular mobile number, I can put that mobile number in there and see what was the activity that took place to that mobile number. So useful thing. Okay, let's get out of here. Get back. Righto. So it's not a replacement for Ops Manager. You want to have link reporting in every link environment. Okay, so if you don't have it already, go back and enable it. It's really useful. There's a lot of good stuff in there. Okay. Righto, let's get through this. I've stepped ahead of myself. Okay, righto. So there's some good data in there. That's some of the queries about how to get the client versions. One of the things I find people are really interested in, who's using what client, so forth. There's some examples for you. Okay. Righto, so I also wanted to get you regularly checking your event logs, okay? So when you're having a look at your event logs, make sure you regularly, you know, get your level two guys to just do a quick check. What were some of the reds in the last day on all our servers? Is there anything new that we, you know, develop a little database of what's expected and what's not, okay? If there's something new coming up, okay, let's be proactive, let's have a little look, okay? Righto, here we go. Okay, so let's bring it all together. So we had a scenario. It's a media relay scenario. I'm an edge person, so I love edge relay situations. Let's get into what happened. This is actually based on a real-world scenario. I've dummied it up, but just to show you, to protect the innocent, but let's go through it. Okay, so we've got the organisation Kitoso. They've got an edge deployment. They want to let their mobile workers use Link from outside, okay? Mark, who works from home, so basically coming in from the internet, okay, is able to be called by Dave, who's based in headquarters, okay, in the headquarters. We've got Aaron, who's sitting in a branch office. He can't call Mark sitting on the outside world, okay? Should we have a question at this point? Let me think about it. Aaron and Dave, so they can happily call each other, okay? So internal people can talk to each other, no problems. But Aaron and Mark can't. So Aaron's sitting in a branch, Mark's sitting on the internet, okay? But interestingly enough, when Aaron, Dave and Mark get together in a conference, they can all get audio. So Aaron's happy when it comes to all three of them communicating. So Mark's sitting at home, Aaron in a branch, Dave in a branch in the headquarters. Okay? Any of you guys sort of got some thoughts about where things are going already? Yeah? Yeah, Chevy, yeah, good, yeah, good. Anybody else got some ideas?
Ports may not be open on the AV layer.
Yeah, that's worth looking at. Yeah, absolutely.
Certificates
are always worth checking, absolutely. Who said that? It's always a network, isn't it? He's got to get a prize, I reckon. What do you reckon?
I think so.
Okay. Righto. Okay, so in this scenario, just to give you... I've got 12 minutes, so I'm going to be quick. If you haven't used iStun and Turn, if you're not familiar with it, I wanted to give you a quick 101, okay? And I'll do it in 30 seconds. When two people actually want to make a call, this is the real cheap... a nasty version of this. We've got references to the deep dive ICE media establishment video from TechEd. It's really worth a listen to. If you want to know more about this stuff, look at that. Anyway, so this is the quick and dirty. Mark is sitting out on the internet. He has three IP addresses. His host IP address, that's the IP address that he actually has on his home machine. Okay, so if he's sitting behind a router, his host IP address would be his 192.168.1.0 network. His stun, so you think about Ewan stunning, the stun address is your reflection, what you see when you're looking in a mirror, okay? It's what that client is seen as by the Edge server, okay? So Edge seeing that client, when it gets communication, what does the Edge see me? My reflection, stunning. Think about yourselves, stunning reflection, okay? Relay, the relay IP address is the IP address of my Edge server. So if I can't communicate directly, I'm going to relay that traffic through the Edge. Okay? So I always have three IP addresses that I can use for candidates to be reached on. The same goes for Aaron sitting in a branch. He has a host address, which is his physical IP address on his machine in Corp. His stun address, so what does the Edge server see him as? In this case, he was actually sitting behind a firewall. Okay? So when the Edge server on the inside saw him, they saw him as this IP address. Okay? So that's his reflection, his stunning address. Okay, his stun. And relay, he can relay as well media from the Edge server, so the external IP address. Okay? Just to give you a bit of a feel for things. Righto. So what I wanted to also highlight here was, well, before you go start troubleshooting, if this is your environment, you're going to know it, but know your environment. You know, really go and have a look. Double check, what are all the IP addresses that are relevant to this scenario? Get familiar, because if you're going to do a trace, you're going to see all this stuff and go, what is all that? So just get familiar. Start off here when you're troubleshooting a problem. Okay, have a look at what does the environment look like. Even just do a quick whiteboard. What should it all look like? What am I expecting to be the problem? Okay. Righto, so what do we need? We need to get a trace off Aaron's computer, a network trace, and a UCC API log. It'd be nice to get this stuff, but I think for the interest of saving time, we're just going to have a look at Aaron's computer. Okay. Righto. Whoop. I'll go back to that. So let's flip over to my machine. Okay. Oop. Look at our scenario. Okay. Gentleman failed. Okay, so if I start with Snooper, thankfully this is not a huge log, so hopefully Snooper won't crash for me. When you're using Snooper, pretty much always jump to the messages. I don't find trace that useful. So one of the first things we're going to do is check for MRAS. So MRAS is a token that I'm given by my Edge server to authenticate to it. Now, the Edge server lives in a workgroup, so I can't authenticate with Kerberos all the normal standard authentication mechanisms. So the front ends and the edges talk to each other and they get together and then say, okay, front ends can authenticate who I am. They say to the front ends and the edges, say, okay, look, can you get a token for Steve, okay? And that's called our MRAS token. Okay, so if we have a quick look, what we want to see is make sure that the edge is working and that they're talking with the front ends. So what I'm going to typically look for is this MRAS credentials, okay? Now you see here I've actually been given a username and a password and a token for it that expires after 480. So the front ends and the edges are talking happily. That's good, okay? We sort of knew that already because Dave, who was sitting in headquarters, he could communicate with Mark outside. So the edge is sort of largely working, okay? But now we know Aaron actually has a token. He should be able to authenticate to the Edge server. What's going on? Okay, so that's good. Now let's have a little look. Aaron actually attempted to make a call to Mark in this SIP log. Let me just get my... I know, we'll be brave. Let's go. Okay, so what we should see is an invite. Now, in Snooper, the in and out column you see there, the IO column, that just shows you the direction. So this is the Snooper log off Aaron's machine. So all the out traffic is from his client out, okay? So you can see here, the out here went to Mark S. It's probably a little bit hard. I might have to zoom that in. Let's go down here. Control 2. Okay. So you can see there, we've got an out invite to markS@contoso.com. Now, the good stuff is down here on the right-hand side. So when you look at invites, remember I talked about our candidates, our IP addresses. Candidates are a combination of an IP address and a port, okay? So let's have a quick look at that. Control 1, I always do that. Okay, so what I'm going to do, go over here. Now, this stuff up the top, this is the old ICEv6 candidates. So I usually jump through those because the V19, which is down the bottom, is usually the stuff that has the goodness. Okay, what we see down here is our candidates. Okay, I should actually use my little zappy thing. I've got some host candidates. How many candidate types should I have, by the way? Can anybody remember from my little diagram before? This is for a prize.
Three. This man can have a... What are they for another prize? What are the three types? Relay, Stan, and... Yeah, it's beautiful. Okay, so can anybody pick up for a third prize? What am I missing? So I've got host. Have I got, am I missing stun? What's stun? My reflection. Look at this. There's a bit of a clue there, reflex. Okay, that's why I say reflection to you guys. It's the key in ice is reflex. So that's my stun, okay? So what am I missing? Relay. 5 minutes, thank you. So that's my relay. So I'm missing my relay, okay? So I've got my host candidate I'm being provided to Mark. So this is what I'm giving to Mark about how he can reach me. So I've said, you can reach me on this IP address, you can reach me on my reflex IP address. But I haven't provided a relay address, okay? I'm already got a bit of a clue as to what's going on at this point, okay? So I would normally see three sets of ways I can be reached that I should be telling Mark, okay? Righto, let's jump out of that. So I'll have a quick look at his network trace. Okay, good. Righto, so I typically will do filtering by a link, the link process. I'm giving you the crash course here. I also put on troubleshooting is quite useful. Or you can pull up if you've got a nice pre-saved link traffic and colour rules. That's what I do. We'll just keep it simple, go troubleshooting. So you guys all have this built in if you install those parsers. Excuse me. Let's have a little look. So what's happening? So just to familiarise yourselves, I know I did it really quickly, but 199 is my load balancer, so that's web traffic, okay? So a Harvey load balancer load balancing my web traffic. So I can see some green, some web traffic happening. So there's a fair bit of that going on, so I can pretty much ignore that. This is media, so it shouldn't be web traffic. I'm looking for traffic related to my edge. So let's scroll down. There's a fair bit in here. This is from sort of sign-in through to the situation. Now reds, with the troubleshooting, often an indicator of packets being lost, but we'll ignore that for now. Let's keep scrolling down to the good stuff. Sorry, there's a fair bit here. Okay, so all this is still web traffic. Okay, here we go. Oh, here we go. We're changing. So we've gone to blue. Okay, 3478. Turn allocate request. Now, it takes a little bit of background knowledge, but I'm hitting 3478 here. This is audio-video server stuff. So you can see L8's the name of Aaron's machine. Now, if you won't remember, but the IP addresses on my edges were 181 and 184 on the internal interfaces, okay? So familiarise yourself with your environment. So I can straight away see here, there's a lot of stuff going from my client to the edge, okay? And what would you normally expect to see in a network trace? Stuff coming back. Are we seeing that? No. So we've almost certainly got the problem here. Okay, so I cannot talk to my edge. Now the reason why we do this turn request is we're actually saying, hey Mr. Edge, I want to make a call to Mark. Can you get me a port on your external interface that I could potentially be used to be reached on? So this is called the allocate. Allocate me a port that I can use for media. So he's trying real hard to try and do that. So then we end up talking back to the front ends for a little bit. This is some SIP traffic. Now then we see some bind requests. So this is, now that we've given up, I can't get to Edge, I'm going to go and try to talk to Mark on all the candidates that he provided back to me, okay? And so I'm actually trying to bind to his ports. This is also failing, okay? So those bind requests are all one way. I'm trying all these possible ways to be reached. I'm not getting anything back. You can see the left-hand columns, Aaron's client, the IP addresses of Mark's candidates are all on the right-hand side. There's nothing coming back. I've got a problem with connectivity, okay? So we're pretty close to solving the problem. So at this point, what I would do then is probably pull that port query, telnet client, something like that. Can I actually get to the edge? So if you're not familiar already, clients need to talk to their edges internal interfaces when they're on call, okay? for relay of media. Okay, it's really important. It's one of the common problems. And it's not only just from a firewalling point of view too. The edges have a default gateway of the public interface. So you need to make sure your edges can actually route back inside. So you need to have persistent routes to be able to route to all your client subnets. So this could be a problem with the firewall or a problem with the edge routing back. Okay? So at this point, I pretty much know. So let's just quickly go back to our deck. So why did conferencing work? It does. And what do you mean by that? So SIP or? It does talk to the front end. So you're basically right. What's different in our scenario in a conferencing is that media is mixed at the front end. So as soon as we have a three-way party call, all media is mixed at the front end level. So Mark can talk to the front end on the conference that's being hosted on our front end. Dave in the headquarters can actually talk to the front ends. And Aaron out in a branch is obviously able to get through this firewall to his front ends happily. So that media is going this way, all coming in. But when what was happening when we were having a problem was Aaron down here couldn't go directly to the edge's internal interface and out. Okay? So that's why conferencing worked and whereas the relay didn't. Okay? Righto, so yeah, get to know how things work. This is another reason why, you know, if you knew how things work, you would have seen that straight away and gone, there's definitely something related to what the client can connect to. Okay, so resources. We're just about done, guys. We've got a lot of links here, so hopefully you'll be able to use these. This WorkSmart guide is really useful for monitoring, so if you need to get into that monitoring data, it's a good read. Okay, that's our link to the network trace without installing anything. And here's our emails. So we're PFEs, we want to help you. So if you have any questions, feel free to contact us after the event.